Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is a somber day. And as we all know, Charlie Kirk was assassinated today. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about what has led us to this. And I am very biased as a former liberal who is now conservative. I have my belief systems in what I think has happened and what will continue to happen unless we decide to put a stop to this. So for everybody out there who doesn't know myself, I am the host of Fired Up, your source for conservative talk. Normally we come on at a Friday, but I felt this assassination was important enough. That's how big a figure Charlie Kirk is. I am a conservative Latino. I grew up in Panama, as many of y'all know. I am of Panamanian and Puerto Rican descent. As an American citizen, I watched two dictators abuse my Panamanian brethren. I watched my family live in fear. I remember when my mother would talk to my aunts, my relatives, they would whisper. I mean, they're in their homes and they're still whispering because of that fear. And I was shielded because of the privileges of being a United States citizen. I was born a citizen. And that contrast shaped everything in how I view America, what it is, what it represents, and who and what we are as a people. It showed me that we are special and consequential in terms of how we are viewed and our own actions. However, let's fast forward to right around 1990. I started seeing similar tactics that I saw these two dictators happening here in this country in terms of shushing people up. You can't say this. You can't say that. And first it was the racial issue. We transcended that. That's still a big part of it. But I saw the Anglo voice being shut down. And as you can tell, I look Anglo. And I guess I am Anglo. I had the Spaniard in me. My grandmother's what you would call Afro-Caribbean, I guess. My mother looks like a little Korean woman. We run the gamut from straight to gay, dirt poor that y'all don't understand, third world country dirt poor, to some family members who are well off. And so I saw this happening. And what I loved and admired about Charlie Kirk was that the effort to silence Americans to speak freely, he didn't care. He wasn't afraid. He spoke the truth. He respectfully debated and reached young audiences with clarity and conviction that conservatives in the Republican Party have traditionally struggled to achieve and still do, which is what made Charlie Kirk so important to the movement. But the response from the left, and specifically elected Democrats, progressives, and those consumed with TDS, and not all of you. There's some of you in that class, those classes I just said, that don't think like this, but a big chunk of these individuals do. Their hate was and is relentless. Daily smears, none of it true. The one thing about Charlie Kirk is he could always back his stuff up. It was remarkable watching him debate. You know, him and Dave Smith, a libertarian, they're on a level unto themselves. But the left used classic Alinsky tactics. And I read the book. In fact, I need to reread it, and you need to read it yourselves to understand the mindset of how the left strategizes and the tactics they use. And one of them is you attack the messenger when you can't win the debate. You deflect from the issue. And that's what they consistently did to demonize Charlie Kirk. So even after the disgraceful remarks from the Minneapolis mayor, Jacob Frey, a degenerate, Charlie was a man of faith. He has passed, but I know during the moments he was still with us, he would have welcomed prayer. He was a man of faith. And what makes this all the more disturbing is he always treated his opponents with respect. He would debate them, talk to them, not dehumanize them. And that just could not be allowed by the left. Because when the left fears someone, it's not enough to discredit them. They want to erase them. I've spoken about this too many times a count on Fired Up. I saw it in Panama. I see it here. And I love that Charlie Kirk not only could debate, but he would not only win the debate, which wasn't important in his eyes. What was important was changing that person's mind. And that's what he did. Charlie could change minds. After I sold my business, which I'm very proud of, I lived the American dream, which is what makes this country so great. 5'7" Latino and taking professional football to another level with fantasy sports. My website was one of the tops in the industry. period. We were featured on television. I'm not saying this to brag. I'm just saying this in the sense of this is what this country represents. This is what Charlie Kirk pushed that anybody, especially minorities, could achieve as well. And after I sold the company, I entered politics because I was done with identity politics and the violence that followed it. I then started this current venture for the same reasons. I remember calling my partner, Big John, and talking to him about the business, but I would always stress to him, hey, we can actually we can't change the world, but we can change our little corner, you know, in the house, I guess. And I pushed that because I believe that. And watching Charlie Kirk, I don't even think I've told my partner this, but Charlie Kirk is one of the individuals who inspired me. I was happily envious, like, man, who's this little punk doing this? I can do that too, you know? But he made a difference on such a level that not even he may have seen. Charlie wasn't hateful. He was willing to talk and willing to debate. And that's what the left cannot and cannot tolerate, is an individual who can not only win the argument, but more importantly, can change minds. So to Charlie Kirk, rest in peace. God bless and Godspeed as you begin your new journey. And with that, let's bring on our panel tonight. We have the G-Man is here. And then we're welcoming the beautiful Miss Annette Ross again. And we haven't seen Annette here for a little while. If I can sit there and click this on properly. There we go. How are you guys doing? Before we get into anything, let me hear your thoughts. And let's start with the beautiful Miss Annette Ross. It's been a while.
Hey, thank you for having me, William. I guess heartbroken, you know, and in tears as soon as I found out. I think, like so many people, those kinds of moments don't seem real. They can't be really happening. I don't know if you know this, but I got to meet Charlie in 2019, and he sat and had a cup of coffee with me at a venue we were at and tried to convince me not to send my girls to college. He said, it will corrupt them. And the thing, I had never met him before. And here's this young guy, and I'm thinking, how do you know? I'm a mom. I have these, you know, daughters. You're telling me. He was extremely convincing, extremely articulate. I went away from that conversation and said to my husband, Bill, I said, boy, he is articulate. He is something else. This guy is brilliant. And he really got me thinking about Carl. I mean, he made very, very powerful arguments. So I think he spoke to a lot of young people. I know that my daughters, they all of them, except my daughter Georgia, who didn't know who he was until today, really admired him and listened to him. And I thought the way he handled his arguments was such respect. And that is a discourse that we actually need. So I did not see him as the polarizing figure that they're talking about today. I saw him as someone who really just met the issues head on, had decent and fair discourse about it, and just happened to be brilliant with his conversation and with his points of view. So I'm actually heartbroken this afternoon for his beautiful family. I'm thinking so much and praying for his wife and his little daughter and his son. That is just absolutely devastating.
It is. Gee, when I saw the news and I saw he was shot, and I was hearing it, and I'm like thinking, okay, you know, they haven't said he's dead, you know, so I'm like, okay. Then I saw the video. We're not going to show the video. It's out there for you to see. And my first thought, that was a high caliber bullet or shot from a rifle, the velocity. It was like when people were saying he's not coming back from that, you know, I was in denial. I was like, you know, they're saying the clavicle and all that, and obviously it wasn't meant to be. What are your thoughts on the shooting and your thoughts on Charlie Kirk along the lines of what Annette and I have said?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the video, and I watched it. I'm talking about the close-up, not the one from far right away where you could see, you know, a couple thousand people in the audience. I'm talking, you're looking at the tent. And when I saw that, I'm sitting there going, how does he even have a chance? I mean, that was that bullet was on the mark. You tear that artery. I mean, I don't see how you survive that. And I'm surprised he survived as much as he did. But look, I think it's a terrible day. What was it? 14 months ago, they tried to shoot Trump. And I said they, because I don't think Thomas Crooks acted alone. Right. And we still don't know anything about that, barely anything. And now they're trying to silence a voice that, look, this guy was not an elected official. It's not like JFK or RFK, Robert Kennedy. This is more like Martin Luther King. I'm not going to say he's up there with Martin Luther King, but he was an activist and he fought for the rights of all people, and they wanted to silence him. I'm saying they right now because I'm not convinced it's just one random person, right? But it could just be a lone nut, and that if that's the case, that's fine. But I find it ironic and fitting that they shot him through the neck, through the vocal cords, right? And it's almost like they're not. I mean, I'm sad Charlie Kirk died and he left behind a wife and a couple children, and I wish that never happened. And he deserved to live a long life, and those, the wife and kids deserve to have a husband and father that lived a long life with them. But this is also a shot against free speech. I mean, what that was a bullet to say shut up, not only to him, because he was leading a movement, and a movement that was effective, and a movement where college students were being convinced, but just the overall movement of MAGA, which is a kind of amalgam of like a anti-war, RFK type movement with the free economics of, classic conservatism, right? So you got this amalgam of movements, and it was effective, and Charlie Kirk was right at the forefront saying, look, we don't need to fight wars, we don't need to go out there and reassert our new world order or whatnot. And yet we should have freedoms here at home to live our, lives in peace. And it's okay to believe in God. And it's okay to believe in, the sanctity of life. So they shot him, or he shot whoever the killer was. It's very sad. And I can tell it's not just conservatives. A lot of my liberal friends, who I didn't even know that they knew who Charlie Kirk was, they're posting Facebook stories, which I thought Facebook was pretty much a dead platform, saying, rest in peace.
It is for our viewers. Right?
But, people are on Instagram a lot more, but I see it everywhere. Even my son, I didn't even know he knew who Charlie Kirk was. Yeah. And he's like, rest in peace, with a picture of his family. I'm like, you know who Charlie Kirk is? I mean, he's 16. So this is going to change America in a way that I don't think we know yet.
I'm not going to sit there and say he was on the level of MLK, Malcolm X, or JFK, or any of those individuals. But I'm not going to lie. There are a lot of people who said that he was going to be president. Ben Shapiro came out with a post today saying that when he first met him, he said this guy's going to be leading the RNC at one point. Then he later said he's bigger than that. And a lot of people, it took his death for me to remember that, because other people started talking about that. But I do remember, and I think it's hit a lot of people because he's not like me. I will get vile right down with the leftists when they attack us. Charlie Kirk was none of that. There were times he would embarrass somebody who was truly extreme at one of these events he does, but he always let you talk. He always asked you why, and he would have a conversation and a dialogue with you. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on the talk that – and the reason I say that is he may not have been on that level, but people saw his future. He was only 31 years old. He started TPUSA at the age of 18. Before I bring Big John on, real quick on Charlie Kirk. He was born in 1993, rest in peace at 31. He founded Turning Point USA at 18. No Ivy League pedigree. He just conviction. He got startup money from Freeze. What's Freeze's name? He backed Rick Santorum years ago during his run, but a billionaire, one of the smaller billionaires, you know, but a billionaire, who is a man of faith himself. And, he built the youth movement, Charlie Kirk did. He launched a Charlie Kirk show and became a trusted voice for millions. He was a man of faith, a father, and a fearless debater who treated opponents with respect. And I think that's why it hit me hard. I'm like, man, if it's somebody of my ilk who's winning the fight back, I'm like, okay, tit for tat. But Charlie was none of that. Charlie was the exact opposite. Let's debate it. You know, and with that, I want to bring Big John on and get his thoughts on that as well. Big John is host of the two podcasts on here. He hosts our Libertarian Talk Free for All with Hody Johns, and he hosts what I call the intellectual wing of the Libertarian Party, Liberty Lens, with former Vice President candidate of the Libertarian Party, Mike Terma. John, your thoughts, and full transparency. I'm assuming John was probably not a big fan of Charlie Kirk.
Oh, but, No, not at all.
The reason I asked John on, and his partner Mike, is because of what we just said about Charlie. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't this vile, evil person he would debate. Big John, your thoughts?
Well, to be honest with you, we just got done shooting Liberty Lens pre-recorded on Charlie Kirk. So, you know, we'll have... Thursday, check us out. We'll have like our opinions on it as well. But, you know, the only thing, like when I tweeted one comment out on this today on my account, and the only thing I could say was senseless, utterly senseless.
Yes.
That because I didn't want to jump to any conclusions. You know, we've even had Kash Patel who came right out and said, we've got a suspect, only to find out that by the time he landed, they had let the guy go. It wasn't the suspect. They're still on.
Oh no, they haven't let him go. They haven't let him go. They think he's part of the. They think he's a patsy.
But somehow, anyway, he's not the person who did the shooting. Right. I think is what they meant. So anyway, you know, and I think William, credit to you. You've said this as well. It's really not a smart idea to hop on Twitter an hour after an event like this and start speculating as to what happened, who did it, why it happened, and all that. So I think that's the first thing. But the thing that we want to point out, that I want to point out, is you're absolutely right. There's few people I've found more disagreeable than Charlie Kirk. I don't use words like vile. William, I know you tend to sometimes, and we have our own debates over that, but I don't use words like vile or anything like that, but I really found him disagreeable on just about every issue. I viewed him as a theocrat. I viewed him as someone who wanted a Christian nation. I viewed him as someone who was inhospitable to people that did not look like him, originate like him, and think like him, which is fine. That's a political thing. But to reiterate, this is a senseless act, utterly, totally senseless. I don't view it as a political thing, not in the sense, before you jump down my throat, I know you're about to. I don't view it as political, not in the sense that whoever ended up doing this was trying to silence someone they disagreed with. I view this more as the intolerance of where our country has been going. And I think that's the issue. The issue isn't whether Charlie Kirk was right or wrong. I have three people on this show that I love dearly that thought he was the bee's knees and that he was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And his accomplishments can't be denied. At 31 years old, having accomplished something that a lot of us will never accomplish in our extended lifetimes, right? So you can't deny that. I don't deny that his family is in horrible shape right now. A young wife, two young children, I think both under the age of three. One in three have, you know, they don't have a father anymore. This is utterly senseless. That's the only thing I could say. It's utterly senseless.
Right. I want to get – go ahead.
No, I was going to say I'm just a little concerned now with what happens in the aftermath.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that, so don't worry. We'll get your input in.
Okay.
So before I give it to you, G, I started out the show saying my grandmother, you look at her, you see an Afro-Caribbean. You see my mother, you see this little Korean woman. My cousins have the complexion of G. You know, we're a mutt family. And I grew up that to succeed, you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror, look at your own flaws, look at your own faults. And when I sat there and said in the opening, since the 1990s, I saw it. I saw my brethren Latinos. I saw Black America all of a sudden this victim mentality. Let's blame this. Let's blame that. It's not our fault. Over the last 10 years when Obama started, I started seeing the vile hatred come out. Charlie wasn't afraid to speak up. It wasn't that Charlie didn't care for people who looked like him or didn't look like him. It was the exact opposite. He has thousands of Blacks working for, well, I don't know about thousands, but hundreds and hundreds of Blacks working for him at TPUSA. Before she went off the rails, he gave Candace Owens her first big break. Charlie Kirk was nothing of the individual who only looked at whites as a superior race. It was the exact opposite. He looked at our country, yes, and he did look at our country as a Christian nation. And I'll be honest, as I get older, I'm like, the Christian nation, we are a Christian nation. I don't care what anybody says. Our founding fathers had a Christian belief. And the reason I say that is I think we've lost God a little bit. Because as I told John, we moved to the States, I got picked on. I'm an emotional kid. I went home and I got the knife and I was ready to cut some people up at the age of 11.
You're an emotional adult too, William.
Yeah. But I'm in control now because of God, because of those values that I learned from. And I think when you lose those values, you lose your soul. Had I not had God in my life, I would have probably wound up being one of these thugs, whether it's a Latino, white, or Black guy in prison, because my emotions would have gotten the better of me. But that was because of my mom. So I get what you're saying, but I kind of disagree. As you said, there's a man of color there, the G-man there. There's a woman there. And Charlie Kirk was not beloved by feminists neither. Your thoughts on that. And don't hate on John. Pick on John. I just wanted to
Pick on me. I don't care.
That narrative has taken hold in our politics, right? And that who's I watching? Somebody said something like, some person took George Wallace's right wing views and ran with it during the 80s and became a Republican. And I'm sitting there going, George Wallace became a Republican? Wait, no, yeah. George Wallace was a Democrat till the day he died. Like, what are you talking about? So there's like this narrative that, okay, well, since the 60s, because like three or four Dixiecrats joined the Republican Party from the Democrat Party, all of a sudden the Republican Party is the party of whites, which I've never felt more welcomed by a political party than the Republican Party, and that goes back to the 90s when I was a college student. And I did go to a Democrat Party thing, and they just seem to be angry about everything. And I'm like, this is not my vibe. So it's understanding the conservative message. The conservative message is you treat everyone the same. And then maybe some of the slogans like all people matter, like during the 2020s, like it was a little tone deaf and the wake of the BLM riots and all that. But look, if you don't call out a specific race and say, I'm going to treat you better I'm Indian, right? So like I get no privileges. And I was having a conversation with my kids. I'm like, look, we get no privileges because we're Indian. We're apparently people say we're too smart, or there are not enough of us to vote to turn the election around. So that's the real reason. Just because we say treat everyone the same, there's a default idea of, well, okay, that just means white people get the power, right? So, and so Charlie Kirk might be painted with that brush. I don't agree with that brush. The bigger idea is whoever speaks, let them have their opinion, right? Like,
yes.
Don't muzzle the opinion. Because the guy is effective, and that's what was happening here. Shot through the throat because they wanted to shut him up.
Yeah, and Annette, again, going back to my monologue, I've read. Yeah. Have y'all read the book by Saul Alinsky?
Rules for Radicals?
Yeah, Rules for Radicals.
No.
It's specifically in there. You demagogue, you attack the messenger, you denigrate, you destroy the messenger, and by thus destroying the messenger, you're destroying the message. And that's what they tried to do with Charlie Kirk. Again, hundreds of black individuals working with TPUSA, giving candidates to start, too many others to counter list, not to mention, I don't know how many Latinos, we all come in all colors and shapes, you know, but Asian. So he was none of that, but they were successful and trying to paint him that way to a certain segment. Before we get your thoughts, Mike, we're going to get Mike Termont, the former VP of the Libertarian Party, on. And that, I apologize. I'm not going to bump here. We're going to get to you. But, yeah, Mike, welcome aboard. And what are your thoughts on this for conservatives, at least, is a devastating day, and to America should be, to see freedom of speech squelched.
By the way, before he starts, let your audience know, William, you are talking to Mike Termont, now a member of the Republican Liberty Caucus, right? So you're not talking
correct.
To a libertarian.
That's correct. Right? I was going to do that afterwards, but you're right. Mike Termont is a former VP nominee for the Libertarian Party, the vice presidential. Mike has recently become a Republican with the goal of working with the Republican Liberty Caucus to help bring libertarian beliefs and thoughts into the Republican Party. He's also the co-host with Big John there of the Liberty Lens, and he's on the campaign – well, not on the campaign trip. He's on the trail, just tirelessly professing libertarian values. Welcome, Mike, your thoughts.
Well, thank you, and still a libertarian. I'm in a Des Moines motel room as we speak. Look, it's obviously a tragic day, but not just for Republicans and not just for conservatives and not just for young people, but for all Americans. Because the reason he was killed, in my view, was not because he's conservative, but because he was a successful voice that a lot of people were listening to, and some people disagreed. We've had violence on the left, and we've had violence on the right. And as John and I were just recently discussing, I put all violent people who are motivated by politics in the same category. It is they who are the problem, not on the left or on the right. But if you think that your ideas are so good that people who disagree with you are so dumb that you need to find a way to shut them up, you are the problem.
That is true. Annette, your thoughts here in terms of what we've been talking about, how he was viewed, portrayed. And then I want to go around the room and get everybody's thoughts on the fact that many people thought one day this man could be president because of his demeanor, how he carried himself. Annette, your thoughts first.
Well, I think some people that I've met who are conservative or Republican, and then their Christianity came second. I think with Charlie, it was the reverse. I saw his humanity and his Christian beliefs at the forefront always. And I think that's what he was defending even more than I think that aligned with a lot of conservative ideas. But that's how I saw him. I thought he was defending Christianity and moral principles. And so for that, that is what makes me the most sad. I do think he was effective. I agree with you, Mike. He was effective. And that's why what happened, because he was getting to people. And I just wanted to make that distinction about who I believe he was, more than like sort of a politician. I saw him as a human being who was out there at the forefront being a Christian and talking about his Christian values and his Christian principles and talking about the family and talking about families staying together and talking about the importance of marriage. I mean, I just heard someone today say, he kept on coming after me saying, when are you going to have kids? You know, I was recently married. When are you going to have a family? So he was bringing forth those principles and those values that are sort of cherished and sort of like traditional. And I think it was getting out into the conversation with the young people. And that was a role model for a lot of them.
I agree. Gee, let's start with you. As I said earlier, I had forgotten, but a lot of conservatives at least felt that this young man could be president. Remember, started TPUSA at 18. Foster Freeze. That's the guy who gave him the seed money to get that going. He's a Christian billionaire, I guess you could sit there and say. And he ran with it. I want to say like 2,500 chapters across the nation, thousands of volunteers of all persuasions, how he carried it. He was a young boy who could sit there and be in a room with adults and hold his own. Your thoughts on those who said that he could have become president. Do you believe that? Do you think so? Maybe a bit of a reach.
Well, I think anyone who speaks like on a publicly recorded streams like this, and then your words are there out for, you know, the other party to parse and make 30-second sound bites, it becomes really tough to actually run for any office, right? I mean, I think we're all shooting our political careers in the foot by, you know, being on these podcasts, but maybe not. I think he was very measured, and you know, I've seen some parts where he'd get a little heated, but he had this air about him that he did seem, you know, future presidential material. And then I did see on a news broadcast today, I think it was Ben Shapiro or Benny, the Benny Show or whatever. They were saying, yeah, he could have been president one day. It's totally possible. His things on campus, his debates reminded me of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, right? Like, go out there, make a convincing case, and a lot of people were convinced. I mean, you have these, you know, liberals or young people who most of them are usually liberal, at least for that phase in their life, they're being convinced. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I hadn't thought of it that way. My professor always says this or that. So, you know, if you're an effective messenger, you're going to be an effective candidate for president.
You know, to me, you could see Charlie Kirk changing minds there. And you're right, G. I think that's what made him different, though, whereas my career is ruined doing these podcasts and talking, my political career. Charlie Kirk seemed to be able to navigate that and keep and gain the respect of those on the other side, even some he switched. What are your thoughts, John, on the presidency take that some high-profile conservatives are stating that they recognize in him and saw in him? Because 31, I'm thinking maybe 10 years down the road is what it would have been in his 40s.
Well, I don't know. I probably think not. Just because, A, he's making way too money. He was making way too much money not being in politics. Also, a lot of what he said lacked substance. So if he were to run for politics, perhaps he would have been called out on it. He would have met more substantive pushback. I don't know. So, yeah, it's nice to say. And, I mean, at this time, you tend to say nice things about people who were unfortunate in this case. I don't think so. I don't think I doubt he would have run for president. Like Milton Friedman was asked, why don't you run for president? You'd be the greatest president. He said, why? Because I do much more good from not being in politics than being in politics. And for, you know, as much as he thought that he was right, I think Charlie Kirk probably realized that he had a greater effect on, he had a greater amount of what he wanted to affect by not being in politics. He's a lot. Remember, when you're not in politics, you're a lot freer to say things that most politicians can't say. So I think he probably, for the financial stake of his family, probably would not have run for president. But could he have? Yeah, probably.
You know, Mike, I'll disagree with Big John on the fact that he was very substantive. I watch him daily. And he could debate anybody with the actual facts. And he was hard. Like I said in the monologue, him and Dave Smith, and I'm not a Dave Smith fan, but they were great debaters, or Dave Smith still is, and being able, and that's half the battle in politics is creating the perception. I just took that guy down. And that's what Dave Smith is good at. And that's what Charlie Kirk would do literally multiple times per week. Your thoughts?
There is a big difference between being a politician, John's right, and doing what it is that Charlie did, at which he was so good and so effective. I truly would be disappointed if he became a politician and had to curb his style in any way, and maybe he would be the unusual character who, you know, was able to go into politics and not change his style one iota. The problem is that if you go into politics and you demonstrate a lack of success, it can undermine your success at that which he was so engaged and engaging. He was doing things that politicians don't do. He was changing people's hearts and minds and making it cool to be conservative and cool to be a young person in the Republican Party. And those are things that politicians find it very, very difficult to do. So it's really a matter of not, you know, could he have, but would he and should he? And the should answer, in my view, is clearly no, he shouldn't have.
You know, that,
but, you know, 31 years old is so young that Lord only knows what he would have done over the next 40 years.
Now, this is what I looked at, Charlie Kirk, to answer the question is, I don't know. I think what John said is correct. I think what you said, Mike, is correct. But here's what Charlie was good at, which is most politicians struggle with. And as libertarians, we've seen that in the Libertarian Party quite a bit. And that is Charlie Kirk was able to identify, educate, train, and organize the young, which is extremely important. Democrats are great at. He helped build all these chapters. One of the reasons I believe the California Republican Party has failed since 2009 is we don't have a ground game anymore. You know, we've lost a precinct captain. We lost that. He was good at that. He could raise tons of money. He believed in the principles of free market, limited government, and fiscal responsibility, despite the fact he was in that world. And the money issue, he was raising a lot of money. That's how he exponentially grew. And I think because of that, I think maybe 10 years from now, had he still been around, I think the possibility that's probably the power is the greatest aphrodisiac. And I don't mean that in a good or bad way. I mean, the stature of just being even talked about along those levels. Let's not forget TPUSA started in a garage. Now it's in 3,500 high schools, 250,000 student members, 450 plus organizers, trainers, and media producers. And then the campus talks. That in and of itself, any outside of the presidency, senator, state legislature, congressman, that's a built-in infrastructure people salivate over. So that's the only reason I'm like, well, maybe he could have. Because right now, I'll be honest, much respect and love to Charlie Kirk and Charlie Kirk family. I saw kind of a doofy guy, you know, college guy out there talking and all that. And, I mean, he just had this boyish look. But I do think that he could have made a legitimate consideration / you know, what did exploratory commission to do that. And I believe as well he was instrumental in getting President Trump elected. He brought in the young vote. I think the Democrats were their own worst enemy in pushing people, and Kamala wasn't a great candidate. But Charlie Kirk was one of those few that was actually truly instrumental. Mike and Big John, I don't want to keep you guys too long. I know, Mike, you're on the road, whether dinner or some rest or whatnot. But final comments, we'll start with you, Mike, then we'll go to Big John.
Charlie Kirk will be missed. And I really appreciate hearing, especially from the folks that didn't agree with him in every single case, standing up for what it is, you know, especially John. We just spent a little while talking about this on Liberty Lens. It's up to us who didn't agree with him 100% of the time to stand up for what he did, how he did it, the dignity with which he did it for the most part, and his right to do it. And the fact that someone felt otherwise is a real stain on American culture today. We as a nation are in a very, very dark place. We need to straighten ourselves out. It's not going to be easy. I don't think we have a generation to do it. I think we need to do it relatively soon or face the most dire of consequences. I'm very worried about the next days coming.
I agree. And Big John, what Mike just said, that's how I have felt since the 1990s, seeing this great, what's it saying, the city on the hill, the beacon, what everything America represents, slowly becoming rot to the point where I truly fear for this nation, and both economically in terms of how big government is, culturally and spiritually, all of it. Your final thoughts on all this?
Well, yeah, and I agree with Mike. And as he mentioned, if you catch Liberty Lens tomorrow, we spent an hour on this. But the truth of the matter is, again, what I said, I did not agree with Charlie Kirk in a lot of ways. I found him offensive. I found what he was suggesting to be offensive to me personally. I never once said shut him up. I never once said he's not good at what he does. He was excellent at what he does. It's just that I didn't care for what he does. So,
that's fair
but,
enough.
But it's very critical to Mike's point. People like me have to be the ones to say this was senseless. It was utterly senseless. And what I fear is what I think Mike fears and what maybe all of us on this panel fear, that in the next couple of days, next couple of weeks, there's two camps that you have to be very careful of what they're saying. One is the left denying that this ever occurred and denying that this is ever a problem. To just brush this under, like, oh, we don't know who it was. Maybe his own people shot him. I heard that floating from the left today.
Yeah, MSNBC.
You know, maybe he shot him. Then from the other side is an equally dangerous proposition, which is the rhetoric, the militaristic rhetoric. Charlie Kirk is a casualty of a war. We are in a war. We are fighting evil. We are fighting the forces of evil. We are fighting this. We are fighting that. Going back to what Mike said initially, anyone who takes a gun to silence ideas is in a category by themselves. They're neither left nor right, libertarian, Republican, Democrat, communist, socialist. It's none of that. They are their own category of insanity. And that's what we have to recognize. What I'm afraid of is the next couple of days, you're going to see this rhetoric ramp up again. And for someone who does believe in free speech like myself, I'll never blame words for like murder, but you have to admit this is the danger. Is like we're not in a war. Americans are not at a war with each other.
John, real quick, I want your comment on this. I'm cutting you out because I know you guys got, but I want your comment on this. That's never happened on our side. Through all the tragedies, I've got a list of about a dozen leftist vile attacks on conservatives. Outside of the nut job we see every so often, you know, when you get these school shootings and that, and they're mentally issued. There's not conservatives. We don't do that. Now, this is the first time I do believe maybe this is close to crossing the line. Then you get the rhetoric of MSNBC where they're saying, oh, he may have been shot by his own supporter accidentally. And then they were denigrating. Even CNN and Fox kept it civil. Well, CNN kept it civil. But we've never done that. But do you think we're close to the point where you think, because that's my fear since the 90s, eventually you're going to reach a tipping point. I always tell my Latino and black friends, 70% of America is Anglo. You don't want to eventually piss them off and do the rhetoric. You don't want a white BLM scenario with 70% of America being one culture. And I'm serious. And do you think that this brings us a step closer? Or do you? I believe saner heads will prevail. I believe his legacy will come out. I think conservatives will actually be more their nose in the grindstone for the midterms. They're going to work harder. That's kind of how I see it. But I do see your fear. But I guess my question is like, that's what everybody says. We got to calm the rhetoric down on both sides. There is no rhetoric on both sides. It's one side.
No, I disagree with you.
I don't agree with that at all. And I'm speaking as someone who's been in the Republican Party since you were in grammar school. That's just not true, what you just said. As a basis for discussion, you're just not speaking truth.
Actually, there I am, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit. I am. I've got these documents. And, Mike, I've been political junkie my whole life, and I actually served and got elected and ran and got involved. So I take offense to that. I don't care how long you've been involved in it. I've been involved in
there
it as well.
There is a tremendous
and hold on, Mike. I was elected. G's elected, currently serving, and Annette's elected. Currently serving as well. So we
then
do
you
know.
Should know that there has been tremendous political violence in this nation across the political spectrum for 100 years.
JFK's assassination, Ronald Reagan's assassination, attempts, Trump twice, the baseball field.
Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, right? Like these are not
denying that. I'm saying it's reaching a crescendo. And as of recently, since the turn of the century, there's a whole litany of hate.
But William, do you understand that when you're beyond like left and right, like I have no horse in this race, right? I don't side with either one of those opponents.
Hold on, Joe Biden, you know, talking about Trump, putting him in the crosshairs. Maxine Waters, if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd and you push back on them. Nancy Pelosi, I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country.
Right. Should I pull out? But you're being very selective.
Kamala Harris and the BLM riots, they're not going to stop, and they shouldn't.
William, you're being very selective. Should we
pull out? No, I'm not.
Okay, why don't you pull out all the anti-immigrant stuff that came out of Trump's mouth, that came out of Charlie Kirk's mouth? What about
I am Latino. I am Latino.
I don't care if you're Latino. Wait a second.
My cousin got deported, and I agree. We got to look at Americans and take care of them, and then what can we do with the rest of the world?
William, that's the point.
Most of us conservative Latinos agree with what Trump has said.
But that's not the point. The point is you're saying rhetoric on one side, that it doesn't exist on the conservative side. And I'm telling you it does. It just doesn't matter to you. That's the problem.
It doesn't exist. We're not out there calling for people to get shot on the streets.
You're calling for people to get...
We're not saying confront these people. You know, we're not saying any of that. You know, you don't see a conservative
Listen, I wasn't going to get into... First of all, you're cherry-picking incidents.
I'm not cherry-picking.
You are. Like, listen, today, right before he got shot, Charlie Kirk was asked two questions. What were they? Did you pay attention to them?
Yes.
And what the answers were?
On the transgender, and then the first question, yes.
Yeah, it was mass shooting by trans people. He was the most arrogant, dismissive person of that question. And again, I don't care. That's his right.
We just covered this last week or 2 weeks ago, G and I. The last six or seven attempts, like six of them, have been from transgender or non-binary individuals. And instead of going all the way back from 2013 and now, we put it the last 18 months, the last 2 years. It's like a 400-500% increase of transgender students.
Okay.
And the issue wasn't that because they're transgender. The issue was like these people need medical help. And he's like, he had to type help.
But do you understand that what you just said is horribly offensive to a segment of this country?
I never thought I'd see from a libertarian playing the emotional card. It's offensive to sit there and say that the transgenders, six out of the last seven or so, have been responsible for most of these shootings. How is that offensive when it's a fact?
Very simple. Very simple. Hey, William, you look like shit today. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not. It's an offensive statement.
Well, that's the wrong example because that doesn't bother me. But I get your point.
But you're also talking about a subjective thing. You're saying rhetoric. That's very
John,
subjective.
These shootings are not subjective. The last six or seven.
But you didn't say shootings. You said rhetoric. You said rhetoric. Well, you kind of did it midstream, because when you asked Mike and I, you said it's only one side that has violent rhetoric.
It is, in my opinion. Okay. Before you guys go, let's get G in, and that's Ross, Miss Annette, out there. And then,
I think exactly what you and John, the discourse you're having is what we need to have more of, in the sense that, William, it's like takes two people to fight. And so, and they both have something in that fight that I think is worth listening to and can possibly be true. I do. I just can't look at that and say, I don't think it's only coming from the left. I'm very conservative. I think I'm more Christian than conservative, but I don't think that when my husband and I are fighting, and I think that I'm right, I know he's got a point in there too. And I've got to be able to, like, have the humility to listen to what he has to say and try to see where he's coming from. I think we're going to have to do that if we're going to get anywhere. And I want to hear what John and Mike have to say and why they were giving a difference of opinion with you. Because they're saying that part of what you're saying, you're cherry picking. So there must be incidences that they know about where they feel like the conservatives have, you know, raised the temperature, right? Is that what you guys are saying? I'm sorry, John and Mike.
I mean, it's
not just one-sided. And that's the issue, right? We have to be able to have these conversations. We're not going to – there is going to be – it is going to get worse. Like, this is a serious time. This is a really concerning time. And how we go forward from here is really, you know, can sort of make us or break us, I think, as America. Like, my daughters were saying, like, are we going to break apart as a country? I said, I surely hope not. I don't see that happening. But my children who are in their early 20s are asking me that question. Do I think that that's a possibility? I mean, I don't want to see that happen. I want to see us remain as the United States of America, and I want to do my part. And that would just be like trying to hear where people are coming from and how they see it and why they're saying what they're saying.
Gotcha. G-Man, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain amount of recency bias that goes into just the human condition. And we think, oh, this is the worst time in history and things are getting worse. And I don't really believe that. I think things are getting better because – And I also hear people on the media say, oh, we're more divided than ever since the country's founding. I'm sitting there going, does anyone remember the Civil War? Like,
yeah.
They actually took up rifles and shot each other. I mean, one farmhand against another farmhand.
Brothers against brothers.
Against brothers. You know, I'm sitting here going, okay, so it's recency bias, right? And back then, so I will tell you, I'm not going to get the facts exactly correct, but I believe a newspaper during George Washington's presidency was very favorable towards George Washington. So I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who said, screw this, I'm going to come out with my own newspaper and present the facts, right? So he created his own CNN because Fox News was, or I don't know what the political allegiances were in comparison to ours, but they basically had their CNN and Fox, or MSNBC and Fox News. So, I mean, this is just the human condition that goes back, you know, many years. So I am worried about, you know, other people taking up arms against mm-hmm. free speech, and whether that's mm-hmm. free speech on the left or right, I hope we can preserve that, because if we don't have that, then this country's doomed. We're going to go the way of the Roman Republic.
And gee, what's interesting is I asked Mike on our show, and I think I could ask this here and see what you guys think. I said, this is as recent as 1968. I would venture a guess that this is very similar to 1968 in terms of not the political parties, because they were probably reversed from the situation today. But you did have political assassinations. You had MLK. You had RFK. You had a war going on, probably an unconstitutional war, if I recall correctly, in Vietnam. You have the same thing about to happen in Venezuela and other places around the world. And you have the country polarized right down the middle, as was 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, for those of us that have enough gray hair on our heads, this is not anything new. The question is whether this is more polarized to the point where there's no recovery. And that's the actual concern, in my opinion, is because
that's the best concern. That's a great concern because of social media amplifies everything exponentially. Mm-hmm.
And it amplifies hate. That's the other thing.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. And it also, the other downside of social media is you get, so for example, I have a subscription to the Times. I read the Times. I look at Newsweek. I look at Breitbart. I look at Town Hall when I'm doing these shows. And I do that because, as G knows, we always talk, here's the numbers. Here's what they say. Here's what they're saying here. But the problem is our people who don't look at anything but one side, and even worse, they start following certain individuals who don't actually give them the proper information. You know, so I think all that's causing it. Like, that's why I'm so defensive. I'm like, I've got it all here. I spent the last 18 months cataloging all this stuff, whether it's voter fraud from the days of our inception catalog to whether it's all these types of attacks. And with that said, I want to, Big John, tell us a little bit about your two shows there, that one you do with Mr. Mike Termott there and the other one, Mr. Hody Johns.
Sure. So catch Liberty Lens usually every Thursday. Not usually. Every Thursday morning. Mike and I record it Wednesday night. Tonight we got lucky. We were going to talk about the pending war in Venezuela, when unfortunately, just in the nick of time, we were able to pivot to talk about Charlie Kirk. Unfortunately, I say, because of the tragedy of the event. Catch that every Thursday, me and Mike on Liberty Lens. And then live every Thursday night, 10 p.m., is Free For All. with Hody Johns, where we'll usually pick a subject and focus on that from a libertarian perspective. And I just so everyone knows, this Friday night, 8 o'clock, I'm going to be a guest panelist on the game show, Are You Smarter Than a Politician? No offense, Mike. So if you want to catch me...
Well, it's a settled issue. We already know you're smarter than I am. Just lead with that.
No, but if help me out, because the audience gets to determine who won the game show. So if you want to go listen to Big John pontificate and possibly throw a few votes my way, feel free to do so. Just look it up on X or YouTube. Are You Smarter Than the Politician?
I'll be pinning that, Big John. There.
Okay, you'll be pinning that, so catch me then. Thank you, and thanks for the lively debate, William.
And Mike, thank you for joining us. I know we don't always see eye to eye a lot, but I think that's good in the sense we have the right to speak our piece. Yeah. And that is the greatest thing that this country can offer us, because I saw firsthand in Panama that right was taken away by Noriega and Torrijos. So I'm appreciative of everything, as I'm sure you are. And thank you for coming on. And real quick, what are you doing out there in Iowa?
I am passing the word that the Republican Liberty Caucus is on the march, and we would like to expand into Iowa. I have a number of meetings lined up over the next 10 days. It's a very exciting time. It's a very exciting time for the Republican Liberty Caucus. I'll be at the Texas convention in a couple of weeks. Was just at the Florida convention. And it's an important and exciting time for libertarianism inside the Republican Party and all over the United
Mike,
States.
Well, you got your work cut out for you. And as I told Big John there, I said, you know, I'm going to have to set up a meeting with Mike to figure out how to grow the Liberty Lens and some good ideas that I believe will help the Republican Libertarian Caucus. Because even though we may not agree a lot, I think we have to have these diverse voices. We have to have these conversations. We have, because if we look in the mirror, I may have what I think is a great idea, and you may be able to go, yeah, but we can do it this way, and it's even better. And that's what keeps pushing America forward versus what happened today. And with that, gentlemen, thank you for coming on.
Before we go, Mike, give us the RLC website.
Oh, yes.
RLC.org. Or you can go to MikeTremont.com, and I've got a page there about the RLC, and you can link from there. But you can become a member at RLC.org or go to MikeTremont.com.
Outstanding. Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for the lively debate. And Mike, we do respect our elders like you, so no worries there. Y'all have a good one.
See you, fellas.
Take care. Good to see you all.
All right, guys. So I want to get into it because I was serious. I've done my research. It's easy to sit there and say, well, it's rhetoric on both sides. Bullshit. I call bullshit on that. And the rhetoric, again, I'm going to repeat some of this. Jasmine Crockett. It's Ted Cruz. This dude has to be knocked over the head like hard. There is no niceties with him. You go clean off on him. I think you punch. I think you're okay with punching. That wasn't a metaphor. That was incitement. Dan Goldman, Mr. Levi Strauss himself. Trump is so dangerous to democracy that he has to be what? Eliminated. And then he was talking politically. That's not what that's rhetoric. You know, Joe Biden in a private donor call, Biden said it was, quote, time to put Trump in the bullseye. I said, okay, maybe it'd been a mistake to say that. Maxine Waters, again, if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd and you push back on them. You know, Speaker Emeritus Nancy Pelosi. I just don't even know why there aren't uprisings all over the country. Maybe there will be. You know, Kamala Harris, they're not going to stop and they shouldn't. Murders later, billions of dollars in property damage. Then today, Matthew Dowd said, quote, hateful thoughts lead to hateful actions. You know, they're blaming Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk is the most thoughtful, most considerate out of them. And, you know, again, Big John's out here defending myself, but I already defended it. You know, Charlie Kirk, hundreds of minorities working at TPUSA. Many Jews, many, he welcomes everybody. It's the philosophical belief of who we are and our American values. And then who can forget? Who can forget Mr. Governor Tim Walz? You know, you got to bully him. His comments, you know, and I'm not done. I apologize. I want you guys to get in, but I'm on a rant and I'm not going to stop. 2017, the Bernie Sanders supporter opens fire at a GOP baseball practice. Steve Scalise nearly dies and the media downplayed the motive. And then they asked, well, we should consider why he got to this point. You know, 2021, the riots, assaults, the fire bombings, you know, in terms of BLM and the Antifa. And what did the left call it? Mostly peaceful. You know, 2022, the Colorado pregnancy center that was firebombed. That didn't even make the news, you know. In 2023, the arson attack on a Democrat governor. And why? Because he was Jewish. The left has taken a dark turn again with the anti-Semitism. You know, 2024, the drone that was intercepted near the Trump rally. 2025, a scope rifleman was arrested near Mar-a-Lago. That, and I didn't even mention the two assassination attempts against President Trump. And obviously with today's, sad news. So don't give me this, and I'm sorry, audience, don't give me this bullshit how it's both sides. It's not both sides. It's easy to be the righteous, pious a-hole and jump on your soapbox and go, both sides, the rhetoric needs to calm down. And if you guys disagree with me, I get that, but give me some damn examples.
I've got one better, and hopefully this resolves right here.
It's upside down, the phone.
Oh, it's...
No, flip your phone around.
I guess I can't do it, but...
You can do it. You just got to turn the phone around. You had it upside down.
No, it's right side.
You're right. Yeah. You can't say it.
Okay, but it says, Harry Sisson, this is our favorite Xer. He said, Charlie Kirk is a sick, racist piece of trash. Just put the Klan hood on already, Charlie. So now this guy who's he's a 20-year-old. I've seen video of him. I mean, he's just like this very effeminate tweeter or whatever, in my opinion. But when you get something like that said about Charlie Kirk, what is some mental nutcase out there going to think, right? So Harry has a right to say whatever he wants. I'm not arguing that he doesn't have the free speech. But like you said, it's the rhetoric. It's the demonization. So now some guy out there goes, oh, Charlie Kirk is a Klansman and he's racist and he's going to hurt somebody. I better stop him, right? Or – I mean, just think of the possibilities, right? Think of after Thomas Crooks, we don't know anything about the guy. So he shoots President Trump in the ear. And then for about a week, everyone's like, oh, let's tone down the rhetoric. Even Biden says, oh, you guys, you know, just resolve your differences at the battle box, the battle box. And they're like, wait, ballot box or battle box? Okay. I give him a pass for that, but I didn't forget it. But then they went right on to, right after Kamala becomes the nominee, into Trump's going to be Hitler. He's going to be dictator on day one. And MSNBC and everything the Democrats were on TV saying was like one and the same talking points. It's like, what do you think some nut job out there is going to do if they think that Hitler is about to take away all of our democracy and freedoms? There's going to be some guy out there that says, hey, I'm going to take one for the team, and I'm the freedom fighter. And then he's going to do something, right? Like, that's the rhetoric that starts violence, right? I agree with Mike and John in this sense. There is some rhetoric from the right. I mean, it's not like zero rhetoric.
Yeah.
But most
of it's from the left.
Basis, there is no rhetoric when you compare the actions. Annette, two points I'd like to hear from you on is the immigrant stuff about what Trump said. Most Latinos who are not illegal, we agreed with what he said because it was true. It's what you call an ugly truth. They weren't sending us our best. Mexico used to have, I don't know if they still do, programs to send all their lower income, all their poor to the States so they wouldn't be a burden on their governmental infrastructure, their own social services. So this wasn't rhetoric. This is what you call ugly truth, you know, but they want to put it at the same level as the rhetoric from the left. Now, and I'm honestly asking anybody in the audience, when have conservative politicians talked like all the quotes I gave you of those Democrat politicians? It just doesn't happen. And I call bull when people try to say otherwise. Your thoughts.
Okay. And if I'm wrong, so Rita, I'm not, I appreciate that. And believe me when I say I'm not trying to be pious. You know, like violence, I abhor violence and I find it truly terrifying. Well, I find that about happened. So I do try to strive for peace, and I feel like the only way you can achieve peace is by at least attempting to understand where the people are coming from. But I do agree with you also on the ugly truth that some things that get said, it is the truth. Nobody wants to hear it, but it is, like you say, the ugly truth. And so we can't really, there's no maybe polite way of saying it. And I understand that, and people don't take that very well. But if you, I think, William, you're so smart, right? And you're a brilliant person, and that comes across, and you're so knowledgeable about these topics. I will say that I listen enough to the other side, you know, of the argument at times, because there's people that I do respect and care about on the other side of the argument who are talking about, you know, let's say an issue like immigration, like you're talking about, and how they are looking at it. I think that they're severely misguided in how they're looking at it. However, the thing is it's because of what you said earlier. The fear is really how much disinformation there is. They're really believing what they're hearing from their echo chamber. And it takes a little bit of, like, maybe it's person by person that you start to have these conversations and you get to the truth of something, or you take apart, deconstruct someone's argument. You know what I'm saying? But I do have friends who are very solidly on the left, and they believe what we're doing with immigration and deportation is literally inhumane. And I believe also they're good Christian people. I believe what they're saying is misguided. I believe that we're saying we do embrace people who want to be here the proper way, the legal way. And I would be all for that. My arms are open. I'm a Christian person first. But I'm just trying to get across to you that I cannot look at any group of people and just denounce them flat out. I need to hear what they have to say and how they're thinking. And then I can try to start to craft an argument to hopefully get somewhere with them.
Well, yeah. No, I agree with that with the people. I'm talking leadership, the people who shape the minds, the people who have the microphones in front of them, the people who, when they speak, that person who's going to work, coming home, maybe a Democrat, listens to them and goes, damn, Charlie Kirk's a Nazi. He's Hitler-esque. Those are the people I'm talking about. Why? Because that's the ones who are pushing the direction of where we are going with this country. And here's one thing I hate about America is when we live in our suburbs, in our homes, away from the ghetto, the barrios, the trailer park, and as a young kid, I didn't live in those areas. I hung around a lot of them. It's freaking dangerous. Nobody cares until it's their kid, their daughter raped, you know, they're being mugged. Nobody cares. They don't consider the people actually affected. And I really hate that with all my heart, because I'm like, you refuse to put yourself in the other person's shoes who's afraid to walk out of their house, like in D.C. You saw all the videos. You saw all the individuals. And I remember seeing interviews from the 1990s with Giuliani then Bloomberg with the stop and frisk. When they talk to people who live in those neighborhoods, they're like, bring it on. We love it. I can walk down the street now without worrying about getting shot. So I cannot stand it when people get on their pious soapbox and start preaching, thinking as if their safe suburban life, their safe white ivory towers, you know, expands through the whole country, when it does not. There are times, being a sailor, I'm walking certain areas after dark, I'm like, thank God I'm with two or three fellas here, because I'm scared bleepless if I would not be. You know, and that, you know, so that's what irks me about all of this.
No, you make sense. So you're talking about the leaders who are promoting and propagating that. And I would say to you, that is when we have to get out there and also be a voice of saying, look what this person is saying. Look how they're promoting violence. You know what I'm saying? And make those points so other people can hear the opposing side. You know, maybe you don't. And that's actually something that Charlie Kirk did.
Oh, and this will happen here. This is why I was disagreeing with John and, yes. and Mike Tremont. It's like, I agree with your thought process. But let's dig a little deeper than your emotional outlet to bash on conservatives. Conservatives, we get our noses into the grindstone. I guarantee you 2026, and I don't want to get political here. It's not the type of show today. But I guarantee you this shooting, this assassination is going to have a profound effect in how our side campaigns to do what you just said, to make sure they realize. And before I forget, I got to get this last one in, 2025, because I bet you these Democrats – are looking at the Democrat Party differently, and that's a family of the individuals that Tim Walz's hire shot in Minnesota, the state legislature. Remember that? You know. So let's keep moving here, though. Your thoughts, real quick, on a quote here: assassination culture is spreading on the left. 48% of liberals say it would be at least somewhat justified to murder Elon Musk. 55% said the same about Donald Trump. Unquote. That is from Charlie Kirk. And the reason that's so profound, obviously he got assassinated, but that's what I mean by Charlie Kirk. He brought the data. You know, it's like take, you know, pull your head out your tush with the both sides, need to sit there and calm down, because that's the data. We are, and that's to your point, because you're probably the most God-fearing person in this panel right now, even though we all do. It's, I believe we have lost God in this country. And I come from a fundamentalist family, but I don't go to church. I believe in God, a higher power, et cetera, et cetera. But if I'm saying that, I'm like, there's got to be some truth if I'm starting to think of that. Gee, your thoughts, and Annette, your thoughts on the Kirk comment, and are we losing God in this country to the detriment of our values?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the more righteous we are, and I'm talking at a personal level, right? I think it was Big John who said that Charlie Kirk's a theocrat. I mean, just because you're calling people to, you know, follow God and be more righteous personally doesn't mean that, okay, well, the guy or the guys in power would pass laws to enforce that.
Exactly. But, you know, he's saying is, I'm just saying, he's accusing him of being a theocrat just because he believes in God, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as far as the first question, like, just go back to 2 weeks ago now, we were talking about the previous shooting, and I made the case that what happens is when you watch things like MSNBC and all you hear is, well, Trump is doing dictatorial things, and we're losing our democracy, and everything's being worn away, which I think we're more free than ever. But then now they're viewing things within a certain lens, and they've got no power right now. I'm talking about the Democratic leadership, right? They got no power in the House, Senate. They don't have the Supreme Court, and they don't have the presidency. So then think of the average layman. They're like, well, you guys are powerless. What about me? I can't do anything. I'm just the average guy, and I'm angrier and angrier every time I watch MSNBC. I get more and more angry. I got to do something. What am I going to do?
Oh, exactly. Oh, the rhetoric.
Charlie Kirk's going to be at the college. That guy's part of the problem. And we've heard that if Charlie Kirk had not delivered the youth vote, maybe Trump would not have won in some of these states. I think he still would have won, but you know, some of the states, the swing states, he might have lost. And then it's like, well, let me do something about this guy. And now I can. He's within reach, and he's not going to have Secret Service, right? So who knows what happened? I don't know who did it. We still don't know yet. But just think of the rhetoric that's being pushed out on TV, and then some nut job out there who, you know, like we talked about, maybe if you're taking hormone drugs and it's affecting the way you think, you're going to do something crazy and radical. And we saw that today.
Exactly.
Well, and then I have a little something to share, and I don't know if G even knows this, but I found this to be very disturbing. G, I don't know if you knew that there were eighth graders at our school celebrating the fact that Charlie Kirk was murdered. And yes, they were. And so, and I know that for a fact. So for a very much a fact, and I can name the three children. And so the thing that I told the superintendent about it. But what I want to say is, to your point, William, like, have we lost God? I mean, to me, children would be the last person, the last people to celebrate any kind of violent murder in cold blood. So they are already somehow had a perception of him that was, he was an evil person or a bad person or someone.
Okay, hold on. Answer the question. No, answer the question.
Oh, sorry.
You're dancing. You're saying they somehow, where did they get that perception, eighth graders, from their parents?
Parents, they have to, right? Where else would they get that from?
From their parents. Spewing hate.
Yeah, they don't really know what he's talking about or doing. They're way too young. So that is, to me, that was so disturbing and telling. And yes, that to the point you're making about God, I wonder often, when did we start to lose him? I think it's
happening. Oh, I can tell you when.
When?
The 60s with the hippie revolution. We started to become a godless society. Feminism, to rightfully give women a stronger voice, became a hateful voice. The hippies, yeah. Give love. Oh, don't love me though. I got 12 STDs, you know. All of that. We became more and more godless. Oh, living together, that's fine. And I'm not against any of that, but that became the predominant voice. The values. And then in the 90s, crime went up with crack and all that. Then 90s that they passed the law, but then the victimology started to happen, and what kept getting pushed back and back to the back of the bus, God and the values, and they viciously abuse the separation of church and state. The separation of church and state is simple. The state has no right to put one religion as the primary religion. All religions are free. But that does not mean you, as an elected official, have no right to have your beliefs help shape policy. People forget our Constitution was shaped a lot through God, because they were God-fearing men. And the Federalist Papers, if I remember correctly, talk about that amongst other statements and writings you can find, how God helped shape. So to me, that's when it started. Look, I love this country. I've done a lot of research, a lot of reading. I'm one of these nerds. When we're supposed to go to bed and the parents would come in, see you under the covers reading a comic book, I was actually reading the encyclopedia. You know, and I learned so much about history that way. And this founding, you saw it with the hate for the Vietnam troops. That was an unjust war, but they hated on the troops versus the government causing it. Right. Who? Lyndon B. Johnson, a Democrat. You know, and then John said it switched the parallels. No, it hasn't. We conservatives, I have been more. You want to know why I left the party? I left the party because the Democrats, the Liberal Party, was. They targeted skin. And my skin color, my relatives were such a mutt. That's when I realized, and I was 21, boozing, smoking weed, womanizing, everything. But even I was smart enough back then as freshman class president, UNC Wilmington, I sat there and realized, these people, they want to separate us. They would have my grandmother hate me just because my skin tone. And that's when I knew we were nothing but political pawns. And where did I never, ever see that? Was the conservative base. Not the party itself, but conservatives welcoming everything. You know why? Because of God. You go to a church in the South, it's white, black, Asian. They're welcoming of everybody. And that is the makeup of the conservative. And the Democrats had none of that. And because they don't have that, it's easy for them to get – their God is their ideology.
Yep.
As Crowder and Charlie Kirk would say, prove me wrong. Either one of you has the floor.
No, I mean, I generally agree with that. But I will say that and as we're talking about all these things, people project, right? They project their own thinking onto others. So when you project, and we're talking about gun violence here, when you project that, everybody on the right, if you have a gun, they're going to use it to shoot people. Well, no, you're actually projecting what you would do if you had a gun, right? Or they say, people are just inherently racist against this group or that group. No, I think that's, you're inherently racist and you feel guilty about it. So now you got to force everyone else to, you know, have your type of penance, right? Like self-flagellation. Okay, well, I'm going to force you to be bow to this group or that group and give them extra privileges or whatnot. So there's a lot of projection that goes on. And look, like, I'm not a gun owner, but I firmly believe and hold to the Second Amendment. And maybe I shouldn't say that because, you know, like, people are like, where does he live? But no, I think, I just don't want to do that. And I don't want to take away other people's rights to do it. And look, right after that Wisconsin shooting, remember the mayor? We talked about it. The mayor comes out and, like, he had the crocodile tears, pretending to cry, and gave some sob story of how he feels bad for the parents of the children or whatnot. And then he goes straight into gun control. Like, we've got to do something.
Yeah.
Take guns away from everyone. It's like, do you know there's like 350 million guns out there? Like, how the heck do you think you can get all those guns away from people? You're not going to do it. And that's not the problem. If we had that many guns, there'd be way more shootings. If it was the guns problems, it's a mental health issue. We already talked about that a couple weeks ago.
No, I'm looking it up. Y'all got to check this out because, gee, what you said is absolutely true. This is right after the shooting. To a politician, good afternoon. Was wondering if Charlie Kirk getting shot affects your position on campus carry. If gun control had been in play, could the tragedy have been avoided? And the guy responded back, I learned that Charlie Kirk was shot 23 minutes ago. I am repulsed that you would even think to ask a political question when all anyone should be doing is praying for his survival. Never contact me again. And my point, my friends, in showing that is, that represents exactly what Jesus just said. They immediately pivot to the gun. No. Spoiler alert, people. Bad people are going to get a gun and do bad things regardless of the law. The law, when a law is made, we look at it and we don't need laws to be able to think logically and know what's good and what's right. Bad people look at the laws and try to figure out how to get around it. This was a bad dude, and this person is vile. And Annette, give me your thoughts first in terms of, am I wrong in seeing that, in saying that we've lost our way biblically or through God to the point, ideology has become the progressives' religion?
Actually, I thought you nailed that perfectly right. And I would just say, to you, William, that You made an excellent point about our founding fathers. You know, it was so integral to each and every one of them that I have read about, and I haven't read about all of them, but I've read quite a few books and watched quite a few documentaries about our founding fathers who all had had a reverence for God. And yes, they wanted us to practice freedom of religion. They had reverence for God. And so God was like, it's sort of integrated, sort of like God is already integrated into my life. You know what I mean? It's not like you can't separate that out of me. It's not something that's here. It's something that's inside of me. And so that was already something that was already a part of their writings and their thinking. And it shaped the way they developed all of the Constitution and everything, the Federalist Papers, the things that we believe in, the Declaration of Independence, all of it. It just shaped the way they believed as men. So that was that was a perfect point. And I just, when it comes to our losing our soul, I don't know what we do with a country of people that doesn't have that as their guiding principle and their guiding light. I really don't know, because nothing, it's actually scriptural. I'm going to say this and maybe G will know it. There's a scripture in the New Testament where Paul is saying, basically, when you stop worshiping God and you worship yourself, pretty soon you're worshiping the dirt. I mean, it will only go down from there, was his point. So I don't know, like, where on the scale we're landing there. But I also think when the people who have the ideology is their God, are the most hateful and bitter people. Just like when I've never met a happy atheist in a way. I have yet to meet one. I mean, maybe they're out there and I haven't, but they're always seem to be deeply angry about something. And I think what they're missing is and how we are made. And it says it in Augustine and all the great saints and all the philosophers say, our hearts are restless until we rest in thee. And that's St. Augustine, because we're really seeking him. We were made to seek him. And that's that thing that people fill with all kinds of other horrible and just distractions and every other kind of vice that there is. But really, our hearts are restless and we rest in thee. And that is us, the man, seeking his creator, God. I don't know what we do in that absence, but I think it can only go badly.
Let me tell you a story. It was about 10 years ago. It was a coworker of mine. And we all knew, I mean, not everyone there was conservative, but, you know, the conservatives knew that she's a leftist. And we all went to lunch one time, and she made the statement. She's like, I love dogs. Dogs are amazing. In fact, they're better than people. I think people, and this is across the conversation, but she just basically made the point, people are a parasite. They hurt each other. They ruin the earth. Look at the environment. It's totally unlivable. It's getting hotter. And dogs are nice creatures. And I'm sitting there going, wow. Like, a lot of people really believe that, right? They don't have God in their lives. So what they do is they do have a God in their life, and that's the government, right? And it's to see all these wrongs that are out there, and it's the government's job to come in there and fix them. Whereas I think a lot of God-fearing conservatives, they look at it and go, well, that's just a human condition. We're not going to be able to fix it. And what we can do is just help people turn to God, and hopefully one by one, you can manage it. But right. You're not going to fix it, and one day it will be fixed, right? But it's not going to be by our own efforts. So they got to fill that void in their life.
See, you hit something on the head. We're realists. You're not. There's always going to be mentally ill. There's always going to be prisoners. And what's the left do? We can't have sanitariums. We got to reduce our prisons. We got to lift them. Oh, kumbaya. Yeah, you say that as you live in where you have guards when you go to work at CNN. You know, when you're a politician, you know, it's we refuse to acknowledge the realities of human nature. That's why I always tell Big John why I don't believe libertarianism will ultimately work. It's based off human nature making the right decisions every time. And that's just a no-go. You know, look, you know, so real quick, MSNBC, let me pop this up. So MSNBC anchor Katie Tur. God, she's another vile. And I have no qualms in saying vile. We're at a point where the guy's been shot and you're making vile comments. And what makes it worse, they don't come out and make hateful comments. The way they frame it is hateful and vile. You know, so she's asked, would Trump use the shooting politically? Of course he will. But this isn't the time to talk about that. The man was just shot. But they're looking to gain brownie points. You know, this is her version of, instead of shifting the guns, I'm going to shift to Trump, hating Trump. Then the one guy, what's his name? Matthew Dowd said, hateful thoughts lead to hateful actions. If that was true, 30% of the left would not be existing today. You know, but it's not true. Because we, as conservatives, are not like that. We are not going to the softball field and taking Democrats out. We are not telling our brethren, when you see them in a department store or a restaurant, you get in their face. And sometimes I get so angry, I'm like, maybe we should, but that's wrong. I'm not saying we do that. But I'm saying we get so angered, but we hold it back. Because we have God, because we know right from wrong. Katie Tur was trying to get a brownie points. CNN, and got to give CNN credit. They didn't come on or pile on with the hate like that. And to the audience, MSNBC just came out with a statement regarding their vile reporting. Let me make it there a little bit bigger for y'all to check out there. There you are. Can you guys see that? Yeah.
Yep.
Statement from MSNBC President Rebecca Cutler. During our breaking news coverage of the shooting of Charlie Kirk, Matthew Dowd made comments that were inappropriate, insensitive, and unacceptable. They apologize. Now, why are they apologizing? Because of the uproar. How blatant it was. Now, Matthew Taibbi, who is a Democrat, came out with something. There's something new and frightening in the tone of the responses to Charlie Kirk's killing. America's really changed, you know. And right below that is Wilford Riley, who we've had on the show before, not this show. Big John interviewed him. Normalized, civilized Bush early, Barry O behavior. What he's saying is this is how it was towards President Bush. Remember? And then with Obama, you couldn't say anything. Your free speech was taken in anything criticizing. This is the next level. This is why I would sit there and semi-agree with Big John. There should be concern. The left has escalated this. And there was somebody on the left. I didn't hear who it was. I was listening to a podcast while showering, getting ready. I missed who the individual said it. But there's somebody on the left said, you guys need to chill out. I could be a target in retribution. So hopefully MSNBC needs to get the memo. What they're doing isn't helping. It's stoking the anger. And I think instead of fighting or getting physical or violent, you're going to see what I predict today is going to be an overwhelming conservative victory in the 2026 midterms. I'm not going to bring politics into it, but all these TV USA people, they're going to be on steroids out there campaigning, working hard in Charlie's memory. Thousands of people. Your thoughts on the MSNBC, your thoughts on MSNBC's coverage. I'm assuming you guys saw it or saw snippets of how pure leftists, they literally blamed Charlie Kirk. They were saying they not one, this woman, Katie Turr, did not come out and said, we need to stop here and think of what just happened. A man, a family has just lost their father. A one-year-old and a three-year-old will never get to see their father growing up. The only saving grace is there's so much video of Charlie Kirk. Their kids will be able to see their father as he was before he passed on. Not to mention the family was there. Your thoughts on the MSNBC coverage and how should we handle this with MSNBC? I mean, they're purposely crossing the line, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way to handle it is to stop watching it. Anybody out there, just stop watching it. I mean, it's basically, I don't know who's running it, but they're the mouthpiece of the DNC. I guess it was Matthew Dowd who did the victim blaming, right? He said, well, Charlie Kirk, if you're going to say hateful things, you're going to get hateful responses like this. And that's victim blaming. It's like, if you're going to dress skimpy out there to the bars, you're going to get what's coming to you. I mean, there's no difference between those two statements. Now, he has apologized, so that's good.
Why did he apologize? Why?
Well, because he's getting backlash. Backlash.
Yeah, exactly. So him apologizing, I don't give a rat's tail about that. Because good and well, in the coffee room, they're like, high five, yeah, Charlie Kirk's down.
You told him, yeah. No, I get it. So, but here's the tone and shift that I do agree with Matt Taibbi or whatever. I think the only Democrat that I've seen call for gun control this time around was AOC in her tweet. I read Gavin Newsom's. I've read Barack Obama's. I've read Kamala Harris. I've read Joe Biden. No one out there said, let's run to the gun control talking point and really amplify that. So I think they recognize there's a shift here, and it's an assault on our free speech. It's assault on our First Amendment, and that was basically the tenet of this country. Unfortunately, they basically trample on the graves of other victims when they say, oh, yeah, five kids dead over there. We should have a serious talk about gun control and pass legislation now. Like, wait, on the deaths of five children at a church or at a school?
Annette, your thoughts on MSNBC's coverage, Matthew. And to everybody, it's Matthew Dowd. He's a man. Because it's easy to confuse him with Maureen O'Dowd, Because that's who I always think of when I see Matthew so close. But to me, it was vile. It was purposely done. It was their controlled professional look, but getting their shots in because they couldn't show their true emotions. Your thoughts on that coverage? And G's right. We just stopped watching him. But do you think MSNBC needs to go, Katie, come on in and shut the door. Matthew, don't even bother calling him. What do you think they should do in your thoughts?
I mean, I hadn't seen any of that. I will say the one thing I did see that was really disturbing was them saying that, isn't it ironic that he was killed with a gun when he was the one who sort of made a statement in 2023 about, to have the Second Amendment, we're going to lose some people to gun violence, but it's more important to have the Second Amendment. And so they thought it was almost like fitting. I mean, it was obviously somebody who was really liberal. And so anytime I read stuff like that, when something like this horrific has happened, and I don't care, I'm at a loss for words for that. Yeah, I hope that they would fire him. Will they take action and take a stand? I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's something that they're able to really do. I don't watch MSNBC at all anymore. I'm listening to the other side, it's usually through watching things like Twitter. But I didn't see those quotes repeated. I just saw this other thing. And so I thought, oh, there are people out there right now who are somehow in some sick, deranged way justifying this murder. I mean, that is, you know.
Annette, go to TikTok and you'll see all these young kids, you know, late teens, early 20s, they're celebrating it. And that's when I get mad and go, yeah, they're celebrating. That's when I get mad and go, y'all don't want this kind of war, the Civil War. Y'all don't even have guns. I got 5 and they're all for self-defense. But what I'm saying is be careful what you wish for on the left. Because you're pushing this country over and over. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But
you make a good point, Wayne. No, interrupt me anytime, because that's the conversation. But so you make a good point. I don't think those kids, because you're saying they're young, know what they're talking about. Georgia, who's in 7th grade, heard some kids celebrating. She thought that like a bad guy went down. She's like, oh, did this really bad guy get killed today? I'm like, no, honey. So, you know, they don't know. They don't know what they're celebrating even. It's that's how sad it is. That's how out of touch they are. They're just trying to be a part of something.
There's this redhead who was at the shooting, and she was blubbering on TikTok. The shooting, of course, but at the fact she saw liberals cheering there. You know, that's what drives hate up. That's what gets me. I want to toss my godly values out. And just beat the living. Or you're a small guy. Yeah, that's what I have. You know, that's when that type of mentality starts to think. And this is what I mean by it's not two sides. Maxine Waters, AOC, Jasmine Crockett, Chuck Schumer, Joe Biden. I could go on and on and on. Goldman, all those people. That's what they want. In my heart, I believe that. They want these liberals to be happy about it. They want ideology to consume them. And if a liberal goes, a young liberal goes, well, why are we cheering this? Shut up, fool. You're supposed to cheer because I'm telling you to cheer. They don't want us to think. And that's what makes this country so great. We have the ability to be free thinkers, to say what we want to say, good and right, and they don't want that. That's Charlie Kirk changed minds. That's why they killed him at the end. They killed him because they couldn't beat him in the arena wars. It's like Big John was saying, well, this, that. But I can guarantee you he can't bring up incidents. And this is the other thing. I'm tired of white people telling me how Latinos are supposed to feel, that I should take offense to what President Trump says. You know? It's like, no, we don't. Because I've seen look. How many 5'7" Latinos do you know could sit there and take the NFL football and help build a whole industry, live the American dream, be a factor on a larger scale? You know, only in America. And that's why I am so protective of everything this country has to offer. I mean, gee, your parents came here from nothing and worked their way up, and you're living in a very nice zip code, and proudly so, because of the values they instilled in you, to strive harder, you and your wife. You know, Annette, you've overcome so much heartache and tragedy. You know, I guarantee you there are some people that I knew in Panama, relatives, just gave up on life because they were so poor, they had no way out. The government suppresses them or suppressed them. You know, we don't realize what we have, and the left responds by wanting to shut up Charlie Kirk, who wants to profess those values. Guys, we're starting up.
I know, but just really quickly, you made a good point. And if you were in the Old Testament, you would be saying an eye for an eye. But in the New Testament, Jesus is asking us to turn the other cheek and to pray for those who persecute us. I feel like more than ever, I need to double down on my prayer for people who are persecuting us. That's more powerful than we, I think, can imagine or really fully understand.
No, I agree. I wasn't meaning to cut you off, Vanessa. The other thing I wanted to say is I was doing my research the last couple of hours here. I belong to many Facebook groups. I belong to many Black and Latino groups. And the love and compassion that these people of color, that's why I get pissed off at whites. I'm like, you're trying to tell a whole swath of people, we're supposed to hate this person. We're supposed to feel this way. Because as G said, you're projecting your own bigotry, your own hate, your own Anglo superiority onto us.
Yes.
Why not take care of yourself? If you want to create change, go work at a place that can help these individuals. Don't sit there behind your computer and be more pious than Jesus, you know, and dictating how we should feel. And my whole point to the audience is, there's a lot of love there. I posted what I opened the monologue with. I've gotten probably near a couple hundred. I'm a small guy in terms of my presence. But more likes and shares than I ever thought I would just by posting how I felt about it. And a lot from women, blacks, and Latinos. So this nonsense that Charlie Kirk represented only white values is the ideological hate and bigotry that one side pushes. G, your thoughts on that? And then I think we're probably close to closing the show out.
No, I think it, again, you know, going back to my original thoughts is that this really is to whoever it is, and there might be more than one person, hated Charlie Kirk so much he wanted to shut him up, and he did this through shooting him. But what that person also did or was trying to do is shut down free speech and shut down the very core of this country because he doesn't like opposing. And I'm assuming it's a he because it's majority of killers are men, but doesn't like the idea that we can have a free exchange of ideas and mutual respect and totally disagree with everything, but still walk away. Hey, we're still friends and we can have this friendly discourse. So I think even people on the left, a lot of my friends are seeing it, feeling it, and they're reeling from it. And I think that response is a good response from a lot of my friends on the left that I see. So I am heartened by that. And I do think that there is a difference in this shooting, especially because even though MSNBC and CNN won't call it an assassination, I believe CNN has not. It was an assassination of a political figure. Even though that person was not elected, it was a political figure followed by millions and millions and millions of people.
And G, before I get to you on that, so what makes it different than MLK? He was leading the movement. I'm not comparing him to him, but people who want to poo-poo that, shut the hell up, because he may not have been MLK, but he had his own movement. He was leading. He had millions of followers. And MLK was not a political figure in terms of being elected. So when people poo-poo it because of that, I'm like, are you that stupid? No, yes, you are, because you've been indoctrinated when you went through K through 12.
And when I brought that up at the beginning of the show, I'm not trying to compare greatness here. I'm just comparing role. And MLK an activist, and he was obviously his goal was very, very much needed at that time for, you know, all the bigotry that was going on. And Charlie Kirk's role was needed, but not as needed because there's not as much bigotry going on. But they're both activists, and they were shot for what they were, actively.
But see, I would push back on you, not in a bad way, but just in the sense, he was needed as much as MLK was needed. The blacks, Charlie was needed for God. Charlie wore Annette. Your thoughts here, and I want to show a video. Then we'll close the show out.
Okay, I would just briefly say though. Then your previous prior guest, who was with John? I'm sorry, what was his name again? I already forgot it. Your guest
Mike
who was on Mike. Said that Charlie made being conservative cool. And there he was infusing our young people with something to believe in and to hold on to that has an ideology that literally is an eternal ideology. So that is what I think when someone said today that he was martyred, I do sort of look at it that way, I have to say to you. I sort of feel like as a person who holds my faith and the most important thing in my life, that he is like almost like a Christian martyr. He was not afraid to espouse the truths of Christianity and to say them out loud, you know, fearlessly. And to have, and then I think because he held on to it so strongly that, and he didn't, you know, deviate. Because I think people when they're deviate.
Not a Charlie Kirk fan, is he?
I know, I guess not. Who deviate in their message. When people have a flimsy message, people don't hang on to it. But the kids were hanging on to it. He was so effective. He was making being conservative cool. And I think that's, you know, that is a big part of his legacy.
So I just came across this earlier. I haven't had a chance to see it because I was scrambling to get on the air because it wasn't a normal podcast. But how Charlie Kirk wanted to be remembered.
How do you want to be remembered?
If I die?
Everything just goes away. How would you, if you could be associated with one thing, how would you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered for courage for my faith. That would be the most important thing. Most important thing is my faith in my life.
Charlie Kirk, thank you so much.
You guys do a great job.
How do you want to be remembered?
If I die?
Everything just goes away. How would you, if you could be associated with one thing, how would you want to be remembered?
The point is, that's why I said, I was right. You know, it's a, he was needed for faith as much as MLK was needed for black Americans at the time. And which party was the one suppressing them? All those white Southerners who are Democrats. And yeah, see, I'm at a point where you want to know history. You want to know the truth. There's your ugly truth. And Charlie, through his faith, made my voice less relevant in a good way, where I get angry. Charlie was a man of compassion and faith who would sit there and talk to you to have that conversation, and he would actually change minds. He was, and they couldn't, MLK, I think he was taken not because he was only black, because when you sit there and preach the spirituality, to be one with God, what's that mean? To me, from a political aspect, that means that government, whoever's in charge, you are not the ultimate source that I will answer to, that I must believe in, that I must have faith in. God is who is that. And history has shown, what doesn't matter whether you're a Marxist, socialist, a corrupt Democrat, corrupt Republican, or whatever, a man of power, a woman of power, you cannot beat faith. And that is every authoritarian's worst enemy. You know, and that is what Charlie professed. G, any final words?
No.
Señorita Annette.
No, I'd say amen to that.
Exactly. Charlie Kirk was a man of faith, a voice for youth. In fact, there have been surveys, Generation X is more and more and more finding God, looking towards God. Why? Because the authoritarians have failed them. Charlie was a voice for that, to have prayer, to have belief in something higher, to strive to be a person, an honest person, a person of God. He was a fearless defender of the truth. His death is a loss for the movement, the conservative movement, but more importantly, for the values we have begun to lose by being more and more godless. His legacy, a man of faith and a man who wanted you to look in the mirror and be a man or woman of action. Rest in peace, Charlie Kirk. God bless and Godspeed as you begin your next journey. And that, my friends, is tonight's show. I want to thank the beautiful Miss Annette Ross for coming out of the wilderness tonight to join us. I want to thank the G-Man. G, the whole time I've been looking at you tonight, you know, I watch a lot of Indian movies and I forget the name of the god, the one with all the arms in blue. I always forget that. I kept thinking of you, Vishnu, I want to say, or something like that. But my point is at times my belief in this country's values is not just that I believe in my Christian God. It's respecting everybody else's to believe how they want to believe. As long as we have faith to better ourselves, to not hurt one another, and to be productive members of society. I don't care what God you preach to, even though I believe in my Christian God, that's what makes this country great. And the authoritarians in charge want to take that away from us. To everybody else, make sure you grumblingsmedia.com. You can check this podcast out there later after the live stream is done. You can check us out on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, under the profile handle Grumblings Media. I thank everybody for tuning in. We had a great turnout for our little small podcast. Over 500 people streaming, watching us on X. To you all, I thank you. And to everybody else, we shall see you Friday night. Have a wonderful evening and pray not just for Charlie, but for his family and his two children. Good night.